takes a second. Well, while we're loading, good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. Just so we know who we're speaking to today, how many of you are teachers? Can you hear me okay? Is that better?
The loudspeaker is not clear. I mean, I cannot hear you.
Is that better? just wondering, how many of you are teachers and health educators and some other? How many of you work directly with youth? How many of you work with a population of youth for which you feel your curriculum or program isn't quite suited culturally? Okay, thanks. I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation in the last 12 months. So our overall objectives for this, the first three presentations this morning that you'll hear are to understand significant disparities in adolescent and sexual reproductive health, to articulate, we'd like you to leave being able to articulate the need to adapt and evaluate prevention programs for and among Native and immigrant populations, describe CDC and ETR's adaptation guidelines that we're developing, and to learn effective adaptation processes and approaches used to make proven sex ed curriculum better suited for Hawaiian youth. I'm going to be addressing largely the first two of these objectives, and I'll explain a little bit about our project, explain what we mean when we say science-based approaches and programs, talk about some disparities data, and teen pregnancy in Hawaii in particular. And included in that will be applying science-based approaches to choosing and adapting prevention programs. Centers for Disease Control in 2005 began a five-year cooperative agreement. We received funding from Congress to build capacity to promote science-based approaches to prevent teen pregnancy, HIV, and STDs. Currently, our budget is about $8 million. We fund three national organizations, four Title X regional training centers, and nine state organizations to prevent teen pregnancy, and you'll be hearing from one of those state grantees later on after me. The primary purpose of this cooperative agreement is to build local youth-serving organizations' capacity to select, implement, evaluate, and sustain prevention programs, including comprehensive sex ed and youth development programs that have been shown to reduce teen pregnancy, and programs that have been shown to reduce the sexual risk behaviors that lead to teen pregnancy, HIV, and STD, through a program planning and implementation process called Promoting Science-Based Approaches, Getting to Outcomes. And there's a link here at the bottom for more information on the project. So we define in this project science-based approach very similar to evidence-based programs that work and so forth. But the approaches that we have asked our grantees to use include using demographic and epidemiological research to identify the populations that need to be targeted, and selecting, really looking at the risk and protective factors that you need to be addressed in that community of youth that you want to work with, developing a logic model to map out your program strategies and linking them to the outcomes, selecting and adapting the best program to suit your youth's needs, and then conducting process and outcome evaluation with the very important part of making changes to what you're doing based on the results of that evaluation. A science-based program, then, is one that has been shown to be effective in delaying the main risk behaviors for teen pregnancy and STDs and HIV. We have two of our national organizations, Advocates for Youth and the National Campaign, do the reviews of curricula. Some of these curricula have been around for a while, but as new ones come up or are heard about, they will review them and have developed lists that our grantees and their project partners use. And those lists can be looked at online. There are Science and Success for Advocates for Youth, and then Emerging Answers, of course, with Doug Kirby and the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. So overall, in the U.S., we see substantial disparities or inequalities in adolescent sexual and reproductive health and in birth, pregnancy, and abortion rates. I chose here the best year available because these numbers are changing, and it kind of highlights the need to really synchronize our pregnancy and birth data, because the birth rates come out annually and we have a good sense of those, but it really is one part of the public health story around teen pregnancy. And I want us to start looking at Asian Pacific Islanders, that's API up there, the very pale yellow color, which we only have number right now, we only have the numbers for their birth rates for 2006. As you can see, in 2004, the pregnancy rates for the U.S. Asian Pacific Islanders were not available, and abortion rates as well. We, of course, all are aware, I think, that Latina and African American and Black girls have the highest pregnancy rates, birth rates. The African Americans come down a little bit because their abortion rate is higher than Latinas, and so forth. So if we look at this, it looks like Asian Pacific Islander teens are doing very well with the lowest birth rate. Keep that in mind. And as many of you may know, between 2005 and 2006, we saw the first increase in teen birth rates in about 14 years. Asian Pacific Islanders were the only race category that for whom the birth rates went down from 2005 to 2006, went down by 2%. However, it's important to squint, you know, when you want to address health disparities, because these often are small populations and they play out very differently from one state to another and from one community to another. There's a huge range in teen birth rates for Asian Pacific Islanders when you look at the state level, all the way from it being the highest at 54 in Alaska down to 7 in Connecticut. So clearly those are very different populations with different circumstances. So the point being, when we at the national level and federal level in particular are talking about priority populations and allocating resources to address those, we really can't just look at national data. Another example is we all in public health right now are, I think, having a knee-jerk reaction of thinking that Hispanic and Latina girls have the highest teen birth rates. However, at the state level, there are some states where Blacks have a higher birth rate than Hispanics. And for Hispanics as well, there's quite a huge spread, with New Hampshire having the lowest Hispanic teen birth rate at 41 and Alabama at 183. So let's look more closely at Hawaii's adolescent population, 15 to 19-year-olds. Hawaii, and Judy and Darlene, I'm sure, can talk more about this. But when we start looking at census data and race categories, there are real problems with the Asian Pacific Islander category as a race category. And in fact, in Hawaii, it looks like the census and so forth has started breaking them out from, they have got two categories now. One is Native Hawaiians and other Pacific Islanders and Asian. So they separate them, which is very, very useful. It's a very diverse adolescent population. In 2006, you can see about a third of the young people were listed, identified themselves as being of two or more races. About a third Asian, small Black and Latina and Native American populations as well. Latino population for this age group, I believe, was about 9,000 at the time. And also, with language other than English spoken at home, was 27%, much higher than the U.S. overall. So for health education purposes and program adaptation, that's also something to take into consideration. Disparities in Hawaii for teen birth rates play out very differently from what we saw at the national level data. As you can see, again, Hispanics in Hawaii do have the highest rate, but again, that is a very small population in Hawaii. Black teens have quite a low teen birth rate in Hawaii, very different from the U.S. overall. Whites are about the same. Asian Pacific Islanders in Hawaii have a much higher rate at 39 than the U.S. overall. And because of the population numbers, in 2005, about 3/4 of teen births in Hawaii were to Asian Pacific Island mothers. That does include, I believe, about 1/4 of these identified themselves as being of Hispanic ethnicity as well. So that sort of reflects where that high Hispanic teen rate comes in. Thank you. And just to mention STDs in Hawaii as well, you might expect these rates to come along with higher teen pregnancy rates. Hawaii is 12th in the nation in teen pregnancy. I like chlamydia. It's kind of a canary to me when it comes to STDs, and Hawaii does have a higher chlamydia rate among women. And of course, as we know, pretty much everywhere, chlamydia shows up most in the youngest age groups, with the 15 to 19-year-olds having the highest. I'd mentioned earlier that identifying the risk and protective factors and the sexual behaviors you want to address is very important. So we really strongly encourage our grantees to work with local organizations to use things like youth risk behavior surveillance data. Hawaii has a lot going for it as far as sexual behaviors in Hawaiian youth. They report less sexual experience. Fewer being currently sexually active, fewer of them having 4 or more partners, and about the same, a little bit less, as having report ever having been forced to have sex. There are areas that need attention in Hawaii that particularly lend themselves to comprehensive sex ed programs. There's less condom use reported among youth who are sexually active in Hawaii, less use of birth control. More alcohol and drug involvement reported before last intercourse, and a higher proportion of Hawaiian youth report feeling sad or helpless, which I think is a good youth development sort of marker that is related to sense of hope and wanting to go into college and preventing pregnancy and so forth. So adding all of this up together, we have high teen pregnancy and STD rates among Hawaiian youth. 3/4 of Hawaiian teen birth rates are to Asian Pacific Islander mothers. And there are some important behavioral and emotional risk factors that can lead to the adolescent sexual reproductive health outcomes that we're interested in. This all adds up to a need for culturally appropriate prevention programming, as well as access to contraception for sexually active youth. That's another presentation. Excuse me. I mentioned the getting to outcomes process that our grantees are working with. This is a 10-step process that takes the local organization through doing a needs assessment, identifying goals and objectives, and so forth, all the way through evaluation, quality improvement, and sustainability. It's a very fluid process. Many steps can be worked on simultaneously. They don't have to be done in order, and sometimes that's not appropriate. For program adaptation, the 2 steps that are most relevant are best practices and community fit. We'll be talking more about those later. Again, we have the 2 lists from two of our national grantees for effective programs. Our grantees assist the local organization in reviewing those lists, choosing 2 to 4 programs to look at more in depth that show best promise as far as meeting the needs of the youth and the outcomes that are intended. And again, you really want to look at a lot of in the fields locally. There's a lot of concern about the cultural population of youth that you want to reach, and we really like to emphasize, choose the programs based on the risk behaviors that you want to address, and then we can go on to make program adaptations. And from the get-go, it's very important to think about what it will take to maintain fidelity to the original program that was evaluated and shown to work. For community fit, the questions to ask are, does this curriculum that we're considering address the needs of the youth? Is it appropriate to the youth as far as age, sex, the behaviors, and so forth? Does it have community support? Is this going to cause a furor, you know, among whether it's parents or anybody in the community? And can you implement this program without changing the core components, which I'll get to in a minute? I will be talking about the adaptation guidelines, but we have a new mother who has to rush to her plane, so we're going to have Hawaii go next. I don't know, did I have time for questions, or you want to save those for later?
We do have a few minutes for questions if you'd like to do that now.
Okay.
Or we can wait until all the related presentations are over.
Let's
go ahead and save questions for
okay.
the end.
Okay. You have questions, jot them down and save them from the end. Thank you. Forgot about this part. I do want to thank Kathy Lassane and Abe Wandersman, who's of the University of South Carolina, and Kathy's at CDC, who really were the ones who took the Getting to Outcomes process, which maybe some of you have heard of. It was originally developed for the substance abuse world, and Kathy and Abe really led taking that process and adapting it for teen pregnancy prevention, and it was quite a substantial endeavor, but I think it'll be a very nice contribution to the field. And there's my contact information as well if you need it for later.
Oh, I was going to go ahead and do it.